WPR Wrestling Public Radio, Episode 5. Hello, and welcome to Wrestling Public Radio, the podcast for wrestling fans who don't like loud noises. I'm your host, Crystal Schmidt, and I want to thank you all for your continued listenership and support. On today's episode, we're going to learn about a very polarizing person in professional wrestling history. He's a Chicago Cubs fan, which is the only lifestyle choice of his that I simply cannot support. He's synonymous with Chicago, he's one of the best on the mic, and straight edge makes him better than you. Today's episode focuses on none other than the arguably best in the world, CM Punk, who broke the mold when it came to world champions. Born in Chicago, Illinois, on October 26, 1978, Philip Jack Brooks was one of five children. He was raised in Lockport, Illinois, about a 50-minute drive outside of the city of Chicago. He had a pretty bad relationship with most of his biological family, saying that he feels like he may have been from outer space and adopted by them. He recalls his parents giving his brother expensive gifts and opportunities that he squandered, but that he never received the similar support from their parents. He also reflects on his father's alcoholism as a factor that pushed him away from his family. Brooks ended up leaving home to stay with his best friend Chez, and Chez's family essentially adopted him. In high school, Brooks referred to himself as a nerd. He had read an issue of Maximum Rock and Roll where there was an interview with a band that he liked called Minor Threat about straight edge, which I'll touch on more later on in this episode. Punk identified with the idea of straight edge and adopted that classification for himself. At the same time, Brooks was also a huge wrestling fan growing up. He recalls an infamous Rowdy Roddy Piper run-in with Jimmy Snuka on a Piper's Pit segment, where Piper smashed a coconut against Snuka's head, and Snuka fell backwards into the set behind him. He immediately drew parallels between himself and Piper. Nobody liked them, people made fun of them for how they dressed, they weren't the biggest guys, but they did have the biggest mouths. So he decided he was going to become a wrestler. At 15 years old, Brooks's friend started a DIY, or do-it-yourself, backyard wrestling organization called LWF, Lunatic Wrestling Federation. It was at this time that he adopted the ring name CM Punk. As they began doing shows, they started charging admission, drawing 200 to 300 people per event. Local trained wrestlers, however, hated them because they were untrained and thought to be unsafe. CM Punk's brother was in charge of all of the money for LWF and embezzled most or all of the promotion's money. Punk's relationship with his brother has been strained ever since. After the falling out between Punk and his brother, he enrolled at a local wrestling school in Chicago called Steel Domain. He received formal training from Ace Steel, Danny Dominion, and Kevin Quinn. It was during his training at Steel Domain that Punk met Colt Cabana, and the two bonded over wrestling and became fast friends and trained together often. The pair would be booked together frequently at shows because their matches together would draw lots of attention. Punk and Colt wrestled for IWA, Independent Wrestling Association Mid-South, and that was the first place they felt at home as wrestlers. IWA was typically known for its hardcore death matches, but these two would come in and do more traditional wrestling to kind of give a palate cleanser during events. While Punk was still figuring out his way in the wrestling world, his girlfriend at the time suggested that maybe he focus on being a heel, because he was punk rock and straight edge, and basically the antithesis of the typical wrestling fan at the time. An important introduction at one of his IWA shows was, "My name is CM Punk, and I'm straight edge. That means I am drug-free, I'm alcohol-free, and I'm better than each and every single one of you here today." Remember this quote because we're going to come back to where an attitude like that stems from. In IWA's last event that was held in a venue known as the Barn, Punk had a match with Chris Hero, in which Punk had decided he was going to literally tear the place down. The two wrestlers rammed each other through walls and hung from the rafters, trying to destroy the establishment from the inside out. Punk and Hero began being booked for matches in different cities, where they became well known for doing very long matches, often 60 minutes or longer. Also, while wrestling for IWA, Punk had the opportunity to wrestle against Eddie Guerrero, and although he certainly thought of himself as a really good wrestler at the time, CM Punk realized he still had so much to learn and grow into. His mic skills at the time allowed him to always give off the impression that he was the best wrestler in the building to make up for that difference. During his career with IWA, Punk won the IWA Mid-South Light Heavyweight Championship twice, and the promotion's Heavyweight Championship 5 times. As I watched some old footage of CM Punk on the independent circuit, he definitely took a position that's very familiar to those who go to punk or hardcore shows. It's that dynamic where you have a vocalist up on stage in front of everyone, or in this case, Punk was in the ring. And he would engage the crowd with his words, talking about how the wrestlers all put their lives on the line every night, and that no matter their opinions of him specifically, he wanted the crowd to know that the wrestlers do that every night for them. You often see this relationship where vocalists do this in between songs during shows, and it works to engage the audience. It creates a bond that says, we're all here for the right reasons, whether it's music, or in Punk's case, wrestling. Punk and his pal, Colt Cabana, got booked by Ring of Honor Wrestling in 2002. It was during this time that Punk began giving some of the greatest interviews, and veteran wrestlers took notice, like Raven, who wanted to work with him because of how capable he was of creating storylines. His rivalry with Raven revolved around Punk's straight-edge lifestyle, with Punk drawing parallels between Raven and his alcoholic father. Punk and Colt Cabana won the Ring of Honor Tag Team Championship twice under the team called the Second City Saints, a name that was a nod to the city of Chicago, which is home to an improv school famed for churning out an abundance of comedians such as Dan Aykroyd, John and Jim Belushi, John Candy, Steve Carell, Stephen Colbert, Chris Farley, Tina Fey, Eugene Levy, Tim Meadows, Bill Murray, Mike Myers, Amy Poehler, and the list goes on. That comedy school was called Second City. It was also around this same time in 2003 that Punk became the first head trainer of Ring of Honor's wrestling school, having previous training experience while at Steel Domain. While in Ring of Honor, CM Punk also feuded with Samoa Joe, and their matches allowed Punk to prove that not only did he have the mic skills, but that he also had the wrestling skills to be on top. They faced off in a 3-match series in 2004, when Samoa Joe was the Ring of Honor World Champion. The first 2 matches resulted in 60-minute time limit draws, when neither opponent could pin or submit the other within the time limit. The second match of this feud is highly regarded by wrestling fans and critics to this day, having even received a 5-star rating by Dave Meltzer's Wrestling Observer newsletter. Samoa Joe would finally end the series by defeating Punk in the 3rd match, in which there was a no time limit stipulation. When Punk was going to sign with WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment, in 2005, he worked with Ring of Honor to create a swerve on fans, or to purposely mislead them. At his scheduled final match, the crowd threw the traditional party streamers at him while he was in the ring. And while normally, when a wrestler leaves a promotion in this fashion, they lose the match to give up the title that they're currently holding. But Punk actually won the Ring of Honor World Championship that night. As the crowd was chanting, "We will miss you," he got on the mic and cut one of his promos that would become famous. It went, "This belt, in the hands of any other man, is just a belt. in my hands, it becomes power. Just like the microphone, in the hands of any of the boys in back, is just a microphone. You put it in the hands of a dangerous man like myself, and it becomes a pipe bomb. He went on to berate the crowd for being stupid and falling for the rumor that he was leaving. It was taking advantage of the wrestling fans who pride themselves on having read all the dirt sheets and that they think they're so hip to everything that's moving and shaking in wrestling, when in fact, nobody had any idea that this specific night, it was a work. Punk threatened to bring the Ring of Honor World Championship to WWE with him and spent several weeks mocking the Ring of Honor locker rooms, their fans, and the title itself. He eventually even signed his WWE contract on his Ring of Honor title belt. On August 12, 2005, Punk relinquished the Ring of Honor World Championship title in a loss against James Gibson. His final match with the promotion was the following evening against longtime friend Colt Cabana in a 2 out of 3 falls match, which he lost. CM Punk cried, I cried, you're crying right now. At the same time he had been wrestling for Ring of Honor, Punk had also joined the promotion known as NWA Total Nonstop Action, which is now better known as TNA Total Nonstop Action. His work with them was quite brief, between 2003-2004. On February 25th, 2004, Punk had a physical altercation with Teddy Hart, nephew of Bret Hart, outside of a restaurant. The altercation reportedly came to a head after a Ring of Honor show in which Teddy Hart performed 3 unplanned spots and put several other wrestlers in danger by doing so. And for those of you following, I checked Twitter, and yes, Teddy Hart is in jail today. Punk didn't receive much work from TNA, and after a while, parted ways with the company to focus on his Ring of Honor career. Speaking a bit more on Punk's in-ring persona, paralleling his lifestyle outside of the ring, straight edge was the more formal descriptive term used by people in the punk and hardcore scene who don't drink, don't smoke, and don't do drugs. There are several other nuances that people like to throw in there, but the 3 I've mentioned are the generally agreed upon pillars of straight edge by those who subscribe to the lifestyle. You'll notice his very real straight edge lettering tattooed across his abdomen, as well as the letters on his knuckles, which spell out drug free. He also commonly wore X's drawn on the back of his hands on his wrist tape, which is what straight edge people began doing at shows to signal that they weren't drinking. It was common practice for all age venues to mark underage fans with X's on their hands in Sharpie so that the bar would know not to serve them. This visual representation then carried over into the straight edge subculture, which often is designated by 3 X's to represent no smoking, no drinking, and no drugs. He often would also cross his arms over his chest in an X formation, another common gesture within the straight edge community. This is actually something that made CM Punk feel very familiar to me, because I myself have been straight edge since 2004, and involved with the local punk and hardcore scenes in my hometown of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, since before then. When I watched CM Punk's documentary recently on the WWE Network, I got really excited immediately as the Bouncing Souls began playing and Punk is getting ready for his day, and he puts on his drug-free Crimson Ghost Bridge 9 t-shirt. It's one of those things like that typical Slayer fan interview, viral video. You see someone wearing something and you're like, you know, you get me. The way that Punk utilized his straight edge background, whether playing the heel or the face, syncs perfectly with how the subculture of straight edge was split at the time, and maybe even still is to a degree. To one extreme, you had these ultra-positive or posy people who were like, I'm just here having a good time, and I don't need to take substances in order to have a good time. I don't mind if you feel you need to take substances to have a good time. We can still be friends. I'm just here to be a good influence on those around me and to inspire sobriety in those who choose to follow that path. On the opposite end of the spectrum, there were people who were much more hardline or militant in their approach to straight edge. And that was especially the case when I was a teen growing up in the Midwest. If I had to do an impression of those guys, it would be something like, "F you. If you're not with us, you're all targets. If you're not now, you never were. Straight edge means I'm better than you. Hold up, here comes the breakdown." And then they hate mosh at an unsuspecting crowd. These militant people were often the guys who looked like they grew up on a farm doing hard labor. They were bigger than, like, everyone. They carried an attitude of superiority over those who didn't align with them. At times, this even resulted in violence against their targets. The militant side of straight edge developed groups called crews, which were often very focused on the brotherhood of straight edge, and really did a heck of a job excluding women and those who weren't male-identifying. Punk and hardcore in the aughts of the 2000s was already so heavily saturated with men that those of us who were straight edge and not men were often viewed as people who wouldn't be straight edge forever, or who were only straight edge because some guy we liked was straight edge. It could be quite an isolating place, which led a lot of people in this category to seek out and form alliances with women, femmes, and non-binary people from different cities and countries, thanks to the internet and social media. You can see the ebb and flow across this straight-edge spectrum that punk took creatively while wrestling. And he excelled especially in the area of playing the heel on the more militant end of the spectrum. His ability to amplify the attitudes of the militant straight-edge guys that anyone in punk or hardcore has certainly encountered at some point is undeniable. He even formed his own crew while in WWE, the Straight Edge Society, which involved its members all changing their physical appearance so that they all looked very uniform. I'm not here to speak to the truth of whether the militant crews were all required to adopt a certain appearance when they joined up, but I can certainly verify that these guys in crews often looked eerily similar to one another, which probably just plays more into the idea that it was a certain kind of person who was drawn to the militant ideology of straight edge back then. While in WWE, Punk adopted a vegetarian lifestyle to lean out while wrestling the main roster for WWE, after realizing that he didn't like the situation he found himself in at OVW, Ohio Valley Wrestling in Louisville, Kentucky. This was a developmental territory for WWE. Punk had bulked up a lot, thinking he was going to an organization full of giants, and that he needed to mimic that look. He would spend his time in OVW figuring out who he was as a wrestler. Paul Heyman was running OVW and kept wondering why SmackDown wasn't drafting him to their main roster, because he was so good. Heyman says that he would receive responses to his memos questioning this that said Punk didn't even belong in OVW, much less the main roster. Michael Hayes disputes these claims, saying that Heyman thought that Punk was the next Stone Cold, and that his belief ended up hurting Punk in the end. Heyman recalls Punk being the first person in his office each week to discuss storylines and matches, because he was constantly wanting to learn and improve his character and technique. He would also help write television with Paul Heyman, would help edit the show, and learned how to time out the TV show. Through his thirst for knowledge, he turned around his attitude about being at OVW and viewed it much more positively in the end. CM Punk also states that everything he learned was because of Paul Heyman, and that the only reason he never got rebranded or repackaged was because of Paul Heyman. He got to keep his name and he got to keep his ring gear. Punk got called up from OVW to WWE's brand extension, ECW Extreme Championship Wrestling, in 2006, though he would continue to make sporadic appearances for OVW until WWE and OVW ended their developmental partnership in 2008. CM Punk went over with the crowd at ECW immediately. He had carved out a following for himself through independent wrestling, and it carried over into his career with ECW. However, CM Punk still had a lot working against him within the company as a whole, because of his stature and his physical appearance, being heavily tattooed and having more of an alternative look. It had potential to hinder his growth from a company standpoint, but it never hindered his resolve to be a champion. Paul Heyman believed that Punk was special and advocated for him every step of the way. In the summer of 2007, ECW World Champion at the time, Bobby Lashley, was drafted to Raw and stripped of the title. A tournament was announced to declare a new champion. On June 24, 2007, Punk was scheduled to face Chris Benoit in the finals of the tournament to crown the new champion at the Vengeance Night of Champions pay-per-view. However, WWE scrambled to replace Benoit with Johnny Nitro after Benoit no-showed the event, after sadly killing his family and himself. Johnny Nitro, who is today recognized as John Morrison, subsequently defeated Punk for the vacant ECW World Championship, but that would lead to a continuing storyline between the two. Punk feuded with John Morrison and remembers their matches being quite sloppy due to a myriad of reasons, one of which surely has to be that there was no notice leading up to this feud due to the circumstances. Punk did end up winning the ECW title at the end of their feud in September of 2007, but he still had a feeling that the rug was going to be pulled out from under him at any moment because of how WWE was structured to put over people who were the exact opposite of him. He carried the ECW title until January 22, 2008, locking his title reign at 143 days. CM Punk recalls a time in his life where he would pack several people into a car with him and they would drive long distances to get to matches, and that there was a pride to it because it was like the punk rock DIY mentality. They would sleep on floors or in cars sprawled on top of one another. When he became a WWE superstar, he was able to invest in a tour bus, which he viewed as a further investment in his future and a way to lengthen his career by creating orthopedic comfort, considering the long travel days that are involved with being a professional wrestler. At WrestleMania 24 in 2008, there was a Money in the Bank briefcase match. Suspended high above the center of the ring, a briefcase held a contract stating that the winner could challenge any world champion any time to a title match. The winner of this type of match is decided by whichever competitor, of which there are several, can climb to the top of a ladder that must be dragged into the ring, unclip the briefcase, and take possession of it. CM Punk won the briefcase match. On June 23, 2008, he was drafted to the Raw brand during the WWE draft. At his first night on Raw the following week, June 30, 2008, Punk decided it was time to cash in his Money in the Bank contract, and he defeated Edge for the title, moments after Edge had taken a beating from Batista. Despite Punk now being the title holder and having the adoration of the fans, John Cena was still very much the face of the company in WWE's eyes. Punk feels he didn't receive proper recognition as champ, and the locker room didn't provide him the support deserved for winning the title. Because he wasn't the norm, he hadn't been packaged to be the face of the company. CM Punk's first title reign became overshadowed by big personalities and legends who were feuding all around him. At the Unforgiven pay-per-view in September 2008, Randy Orton interrupted an interview with Punk and called him a fluke. Several others from the locker room joined Randy Orton to attack CM Punk so he couldn't compete that night. Punk wasn't made aware of this storyline until the day of the pay-per-view. Because he could not compete that night, his title was forfeited. After his first title reign had ended, CM Punk formed a tag team with Kofi Kingston, and they won the tag team titles. They also became close friends during this time, and would often travel together. Kofi learned a lot about the business from Punk during this time. Punk would also go on to participate in a feud with William Regal over the Intercontinental title. After several matches that all ended in disqualification, Stephanie McMahon finally set the two up in a rematch with no disqualifications, and Punk won the Intercontinental title. With this win, Punk became the 19th WWE Triple Crown Champion, having won the World Championship, Tag Team, and Intercontinental titles, and the fastest to accomplish the feat at 203 days. At WrestleMania 25 in 2009, there was another Money in the Bank match. CM Punk, against all odds, became the first wrestler to ever win the Money in the Bank match twice, and he was just as shocked as everyone else. Expecting to lose in his shot at the title, he cashed in the Money in the Bank briefcase at the Extreme Rules pay-per-view in June of 2009. Shockingly, he beat Jeff Hardy to win the World Championship title yet again. CM Punk remembers the meeting earlier that day, speaking with Michael Hayes of the WWE creative team and Vince McMahon. And Vince had offered Punk a challenge to make a run as a heel. Vince had his reservations about the idea, but Hayes had thought Punk was capable. CM Punk just looked at Vince and said, "So what's the challenge?" And Vince, perplexed, responded, "To be a heel." To which Punk again questioned, "Yeah, so what's the challenge?" And flabbergasted, Vince finally says, "I want to see if you can actually pull this off." And Punk was like, "Sit back. In 3 months, I'll be the best heel in the company. The biggest bad guy you've ever seen." Punk made his heel turn against Jeff Hardy, where he cut a promo, saying, "Now I know why you people love Jeff Hardy so much. It's because you are all just like him. The reality is, none of you have the strength to be straight edge." This was the first time that CM Punk had ever been given a promo that was already written out for him, and it detailed the way he allegedly viewed the world, and he didn't agree with it, so he took control of things himself. He began ripping up anything scripted, often making it a point to do so right in front of the person who had handed it to him. This was his way of pointing out that he wasn't just going to let writers work on his character without his input, because they could never get it right without his involvement. Punk was known for having a strong opinion and using his platform as a top performer in the company to insist that he have some semblance of creative control with his character. Fast forward to the current climate in professional wrestling, and there's clearly still ongoing issues with a lack of cohesion between creative and talent. This was largely regarded as one of the main reasons Dean Ambrose, aka Jon Moxley, declined to sign a new contract with WWE. As a heel, Punk would dress up like Jeff Hardy, including face paint, to mock his style. He took his own straight-edge persona from his early days in wrestling to a much grander scale, and his masterful mic skills turned the crowd against him quickly. Hardy was leaving WWE, and Punk felt that they had a great run in that feud. WWE then scheduled CM Punk to begin a feud with The Undertaker. This was quite an undertaking for Punk. Yes, you all may call me CM Pun for the rest of this episode. So, Punk recruits Luke Gallows, who was then going by the name Festus, to his aid. Serena and Joey Mercury also converted to the straight edge lifestyle and joined the ranks of the Straight Edge Society stable. Joey Mercury had previously been released by WWE in 2007 due to a drug and alcohol addiction that Punk had been trying to help him recover from. When Mercury was released, he was on the brink of losing his house due to foreclosure, and when Punk found out about it, he cut a check for a large sum of money to buy Mercury's house for him. Joey Mercury was later brought back to WWE and used as a part of Punk's stable. As I had mentioned earlier, the followers of the Straight Edge Society would all shave their heads, and this often included converts who were planted audience members. Punk maintained his long brown hair to make him look like White Jesus. Because of his faux savior storyline, he reached new heights as a heel with wrestling fans. He was accosted by them, referred to as the devil, and even had things thrown at him by the crowd. And Punk loved every moment of it, because his plan was working. He would address the crowd saying, "I'm the leader of the Straight Edge Society. Make the pledge to stand on my side, one nation, under Punk, indivisible, with integrity and sobriety for all." It was all CM Punk's creation. He wrote 14 weeks worth of TV and gave it to Vince and said that's what he was doing. When Straight Edge Society eventually fizzled out, as it began to be altered by creative, CM Punk felt defeated and pretty much done with the company at that point. During the first half of 2010, Punk and Rey Mysterio would have several stipulation matches against one another in a feud that stemmed from Rey Mysterio eliminating Punk during the Elimination Chamber match. One of those matches had a stipulation where, if Mysterio lost, he would have to join Straight Edge Society, but he defeated Punk in that match. A rematch at Extreme Rules that year had a stipulation where Punk would have to shave his head like his disciples if he lost, but he was able to pull off a win thanks to an interference from his disciple Joey Mercury. On May 23, 2010, at Over the Limit, the third and final stipulation match between Punk and Mysterio was carried out with both stipulations reactivated. Punk lost and was subsequently shaved bald. It was after this match that Punk began wearing a black mask, also known as his Straight Edge Society mask, perhaps to hide the embarrassment of his own baldness. And for those of you tuning in who know me outside of the podcast, you all might recall several years ago when I made my own Straight Edge Society mask and was CM Punk for Halloween at a Minnesota United game. I'll post a pic of the mask on the Wrestling Public Radio socials for everyone to enjoy. CM Punk was arguably one of the best heels in the business, and felt that he was snubbed when The Miz was given the main stage at WrestleMania against John Cena. Punk's contract was going to be expiring, and he spoke with Michael Hayes, saying that he didn't want to leave, but he didn't like the way things were, and wanted them to change for the better. Punk finally said he was no longer interested in negotiating his contract about a year before it was up. One thing fellow wrestlers can agree on is that Punk was never in it for the money, but rather for creating a better product and leading the locker room. Before his contract ended, on Raw, June 27th, 2011, one of the writers approached him and said, "You're gonna love this. They're gonna give you a microphone, and they just want you to air your grievances." Punk couldn't believe it, but the mic is all he ever wanted, so he was going to make this memorable. Punk's WWE pipe bomb promo went down with Punk coming into the arena and sitting cross-legged at the top of the ramp as John Cena is laying in the ring in a heap on a broken table. The promo transcript reads, "John Cena, while you lay there, hopefully as uncomfortable as you can be, I want you to listen to me. I want you to digest this because before I leave in 3 weeks with your WWE World Championship, I have a lot of things I want to get off my chest. I don't hate you, John. I don't even dislike you. I do like you. I like you a hell of a lot more than I like most people in the back. I hate this idea that you're the best, because you're not. I'm the best. I'm the best in the world. There's one thing you're better at than I am, and that's kissing Vince McMahon's ass. You're as good at kissing Vince's ass as Hulk Hogan was. I don't know if you're as good as Dwayne, aka The Rock, though. He's a pretty good ass kisser. Always was, and still is. Oops, I'm breaking the fourth wall. And he waves at the camera. He continues, I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. That's right, I'm a Paul Heyman guy. You know who else is a Paul Heyman guy? Brock Lesnar. And he split, just like I'm splitting. But the thing is, the difference between me and Brock is I'm going to leave with the WWE Championship. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even at commentary. Nobody can touch me. And yet, no matter how many times I prove it, I'm not on your lovely little collector cups. I'm not on the cover of the program. I'm barely promoted. I don't get to be in movies. I'm certainly not on any crappy show on the USA Network. I'm not on the poster of WrestleMania. I'm not on the signature that's produced at the start of the show. I'm not on Conan O'Brien. I'm not on Jimmy Fallon. But the fact of the matter is that I should be. And trust me, this isn't sour grapes. But the fact that Dwayne is in the main event of WrestleMania next year, and I'm not, makes me sick. But hey, let me get something straight. Those of you who are cheering me right now, you are just as big a part of me leaving as anything else, because you're the ones that are sipping out of those collector cups right now. You're the ones that buy the programs that my face isn't on the cover of. And then at 5 in the morning at the airport, you try to shove it in my face so you can get an autograph and try to sell it on eBay because you're too lazy to get a real job. I'm leaving with the WWE Championship on July 17th, and hell, who knows, maybe I'll go back to Ring of Honor. He looks at the camera and waves and goes on, Hey Colt Cabana, how you doing? The reason I'm leaving is you people. Because after I'm gone, you're still going to pour money into this company. I'm just a spoke on the wheel. The wheel's going to keep turning, and I understand that. But Vince McMahon is still going to make money despite himself. He's a millionaire who should be a billionaire. You know why he's not a billionaire? It's because he surrounds himself with glad-handling, nonsensical, douchebag yes-men like John Laurinaitis, who's going to tell him everything he wants to hear. And I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead. But the fact is, it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family. Let me tell you a personal story about Vince McMahon, all right? We do this whole bully camp. And at this point, the mic gets cut out as Punk is mid-sentence. The promo was an entire career's worth of frustration being let out, including the careers of everyone in the back and everyone who had ever been unjustly released by WWE. Punk says he received a lot of good feedback from that promo. He put himself over with that promo and started being contacted by media outlets outside of the wrestling community. Because of this scathing, apparently unscripted, yet highly acclaimed speech, Vince would give Punk a storyline suspension from televised WWE events. Punk would only be removed from suspension at John Cena's insistence. CM Punk signed a 2-day contract extension that allowed him to main event at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view in his hometown of Chicago on July 17th, 2011, versus John Cena for the world title. I'm crying again watching it. This was the likely end of Punk's run in WWE. However, Punk won and was WWE World Champ once again, which, as we've discussed earlier, is not typical when someone is leaving a company or territory in wrestling. He ran through the crowd and out of the arena, hopped into a car, and drove home. The match between Punk and Cena also received a 5-star rating from Dave Meltzer, marking Punk's second performance to obtain the highest rating. We soon after learned that Punk had re-signed a deal with WWE halfway through that pay-per-view. He was still negotiating during what was expected to be his last WWE appearance. During his new contract, Punk continued his leadership in the locker room and had several more feuds with other wrestlers over the next couple of years, during much of which he held the WWE World Championship title. He broke John Cena's title reign record on December 5, 2012, when he reached 381 days as champ, even despite having a partially torn meniscus repaired during that time. The entirety of his reign as champion would eventually be capped off at 434 days when he lost to The Rock. His record for longest title reign of the modern era would remain until Brock Lesnar broke it in 2018. Another important part of what made CM Punk unique as a wrestler is his very real love of music, predominantly punk and hardcore. His entrance music shifted from Killswitch Engage's This Fire Burns to Living Colors' Cult of Personality when he signed his new contract with WWE in 2011. I think that this shift in entrance theme was one of the best moves for him as a top guy in the company. Cult of Personality is such a catchy song to begin with, but to pair it with CM Punk entering an arena, it brings a far deeper interpretation to the forefront. A cult of personality is a phenomenon that arises when an individual uses mass media, propaganda, or other methods to create a heroic image, often through unquestioning flattery and praise. CM Punk used the WWE fans to achieve this image, and therefore became the hero of the company. It was seamless, and the song is what would play in the moment of the movie when the audience is like, "Aha, we have been duped." We look at his wrestling career and his unwavering fan base, regardless of whether he was playing the heel or the face. And then we look at the support of that fan base even after a turbulent eventual departure from WWE, and it's quite undeniable that, as a wrestler, he had certainly obtained cult status. People chanted CM Punk at WWE events for a long time after he had left the company. I'm sure there's still a chunk of Punk's fan base who long for the days of his Killswitch Engage entrance theme. There certainly were some strong opinions when he made the transition to a new song, including that it wouldn't have the same impact as his original song, or that fans were so used to his original music, how could a new song possibly catch on? But the thing is, when I hear Cult of Personality to this day, I get a glimmer of that little smirk that Punk does when he knows he's misled or shocked everyone. It's stuck with fans. And it's one of my favorite parts of the history of CM Punk. The band Living Color tweeted in July of 2020 about it being the 9th anniversary of CM Punk coming out to Cult of Personality, to which Punk responded, saying, "Was my Little League team song in 89, used it in Ring of Honor in 05, in 11, I gave him no choice, even rocked it in UFC. It's been a crazy life. Thanks for helping with the soundtrack." The song had all of these little nuggets of importance to him, and I think that reflects a lot about the type of person that Punk is. His nostalgia and outright nerd status with regards to things like comics and music wove their way into his professional career, and if we're lucky, they will for the rest of his life. Punk's final WWE storylines from 2013 to 2014 consisted of a feud with The Undertaker, whose WrestleMania streak was on Punk's short list of things to end. CM Punk settled on this as a way to take something away from the fans, just as he felt his WWE title had been taken away from him. After the actual death of The Undertaker's former manager, Paul Bearer, in March of 2013, a storyline developed where Punk would regularly spite The Undertaker through displays of flippancy towards Paul Bearer's death. This includes a moment I'll never forget, where Punk stole Paul Bearer's urn that he used to always carry around. He goes on to taunt The Undertaker with it, and the part that stuck with me most, for some reason, is the commentary team being like, "That was not his property! That was not Punk's urn to take!" As many may know, The Undertaker would defeat CM Punk at WrestleMania 29 on April 7th, 2013, keeping his WrestleMania streak intact and also taking back Paul Bearer's urn in the process. Punk would go on to also feud with Paul Heyman and his client Brock Lesnar, as well as the Wyatt family and The Shield. CM Punk would be named the first entrant in the annual Royal Rumble match on January 26, 2014. Near the end of the match, Kane, who had already been eliminated from the match earlier by Punk, eliminated him from outside the ring and proceeded to chokeslam CM Punk through the announcer's table. Punk didn't appear the following night on Monday Night Raw, nor at the SmackDown taping on Tuesday, despite having been advertised for the event. By Wednesday of that week, WWE.com had stopped advertising him for future events. The Wrestling Observer reported that on that Monday, prior to Raw, Punk had legitimately walked out after telling Vince McMahon and Triple H that he was going home. I'd like to point out that the term legitimately used here is defined as relating to real life and not scripted kayfabe. During a February 20th conference call to investors, Vince McMahon said that CM Punk was taking a sabbatical. On the March 3rd, 2014 episode of Raw, WWE acknowledged Punk's absence on television when the show started playing his entrance music, only for former manager Paul Heyman to walk out. WWE proceeded to remove CM Punk from footage of their promotion videos. This lasted until the first half of July 2014, where WWE used footage of him to promote the WWE Network. Punk officially retired from WWE and wrestling altogether in 2014. On July 15th, WWE.com moved CM Punk from the active roster to the alumni page without releasing a statement on the matter. That same day, Punk thanked his fans without mentioning WWE, and later stated he never planned to return to wrestling. On an episode of Colt Cabana's Art of Wrestling podcast in November 2014, Punk broke his silence regarding his exit from WWE months earlier. If you thought his unscripted promo from Monday Night Raw was scandalous, you may stand corrected once you get a load of this. In the interview, he detailed that he was suspended for 2 months after walking out on the company in January, presumably after the Royal Rumble. According to Punk, after his 2 month suspension was up, nobody from WWE contacted him. He also stated that when he reached out to them for unpaid royalties, he was given a runaround by WWE executives until he was handed his termination papers and fired by WWE on his wedding day in June 2014. The manner of his firing became the last straw for Punk, who stated that he would never return to WWE and that following a legal settlement with WWE, there would be no further working relationship with them. The settlement included Punk giving WWE permission to sell his remaining merchandise. He also cited his health as a main concern when he left WWE, describing that in his final months with the company, he had been working through an untreated and potentially fatal MRSA infection, though he later acknowledged on the witness stand that no physician had ever diagnosed him with a MRSA staph infection. He also recounted wrestling through broken ribs, injured knees, and multiple concussions, including one sustained during the Royal Rumble in 2014. Punk felt that he had been pressured by WWE to get back in the ring before full recovery on numerous occasions. CM Punk also stated that he had discovered a lump on his back in November 2013, which was diagnosed as a fatty deposit by Dr. Chris Ahman, who is a medical professional who works with WWE talent. Dr. Amon refused to remove the lump despite Punk's requests. The week after Punk left WWE, his wife, April Mendez, who's well known as former WWE superstar and Divas champion AJ Lee, convinced him to get it checked out by another doctor. The second doctor told Punk that he could have died due to ignoring it for such a long period of time. He had the doctor evacuate the infection and described it as the worst pain in his life, but also acknowledged that he experienced great relief after receiving treatment for it. During the podcast, he also noted that he had other issues with WWE as well, including his failure to main event at WrestleMania, being paid less than the other wrestlers in the three biggest matches of WrestleMania 29, doing favors for Vince McMahon and not being owed back, being creatively stifled, and feeling that there were no long-term plans for wrestlers other than John Cena. He also noted receiving less pay and not getting answers as to how the advent of the WWE Network would affect salaries of wrestlers. Lastly, Punk described having zero passion left for wrestling and that his status at the time of the interview was the happiest he had been in years. Less than a week after the CM Punk interview on Colt Cabana's podcast, Vince McMahon appeared on The Steve Austin Show on the WWE Network. During his interview, Vince apologized to Punk for the manner of his termination, which he regarded as a coincidence due to a lack of communication within the organization. McMahon said he was open to working with Punk again. In a second Art of Wrestling podcast, however, CM Punk rejected McMahon's apology as insincere and a publicity stunt, because McMahon had not contacted him directly to apologize, and also could have apologized much earlier. CM Punk's first alleged appearance during a wrestling match following his exit from WWE was at a Chicago-based freelance wrestling show on December 4, 2015, titled Raw Power. He managed Kikutaro in a match against Darren Corbin and Dick Justice. He was draped in a cape, and the commentators just referred to him as Kikutaro's nameless mentor, and Punk never got involved with that match. He was also suspected to have appeared on April 19, 2019, in a masked disguise at an event in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, held by local independent promotion MKE Wrestling, where he helped his trainer, Ace Steele, win a match by attacking his opponent with the GTS move. While it was implied to be Punk by promotion owner Silas Young, this was never confirmed by Punk himself. During CM Punk's entrance, he used to yell, "It's clobberin' time," which is a reference to New York City hardcore punk band Sick of It All, who wrote a song with the same name, as well as a nod to Marvel Comics fictional character The Thing. Punk has also done some writing for Marvel Comics. He wrote the intro to the hardcover edition of Marvel's 2012 crossover event Avengers vs. X-Men. In February 2015, Marvel Comics' Thor Annual No. 1, which was partly written by Punk, was released. He also co-wrote Marvel's Drax ongoing series, as well as a one-shot of Marvel's Master of Kung Fu, which was published in November 2017. After his career with WWE ended, CM Punk took up MMA and was signed to UFC's welterweight division in 2014. He trained in Milwaukee, Wisconsin at Rufus Sport, the gym most well known for training Anthony Pettis. Punk had his first fight in September 2016 at UFC 203 against Mickey Gall, where he was defeated via submission in the first round. I remember watching that fight on a stream on my friend's cell phone in a Pizza Luce in downtown Minneapolis that we raced over to immediately following a first wrestling promotion called Mill City Fights just down the street. In his second fight in June 2018 at UFC 225, he lost to Mike Jackson via unanimous decision. Punk has 0 wins and 2 losses in his professional MMA career, and after his second loss, Dana White stated that Punk would probably not fight for UFC again. Punk is currently under contract with CFFC, Cage Fury Fighting Championships, where he has worked as a commentator since 2018. In February 2015, WWE Dr. Chris Amon filed a defamation lawsuit against CM Punk and Colt Cabana over the allegations of medical malpractice on the episode of Colt's podcast I mentioned earlier in the episode. Amon was seeking $4 million in compensation and an undisclosed amount in punitive damages, which are damages assessed in order to punish the defendant in a way that discourages the defendant or others from engaging in similar conduct to that which formed the base of the lawsuit. WWE even went so far as to issue a statement and video in support of Dr. Amon. The case went to trial in 2018, where a jury ruled in favor of CM Punk and Colt Cabana. In August 2018, however, Colt then filed a lawsuit against CM Punk, alleging breach of contract and fraud due to Punk's alleged agreement and later refusal to pay Colt's legal fees for the Amon suit. Colt sought $200,000 in damages and an additional $1 million in punitive damages. CM Punk filed a counterclaim against Colt Cabana in June 2019 for $600,000 and additional fees. Both lawsuits were settled and dismissed in September 2019. According to PW Insider, the settlement involved no financial compensation. I can't speak as any sort of special insider on this issue, but it doesn't seem like the pair have reconciled beyond settling those lawsuits. CM Punk made his acting debut as the star of a horror film called The Girl on the Third Floor, which is currently on Netflix. The movie was filmed entirely in the Chicago area. I watched it in preparation for this podcast, and my main takeaway is that CM Punk would absolutely be a great person to carry the torch of Bruce Campbell's Ash in Evil Dead if they wanted to do a remake that would truly pay homage to the legend. The Evil Dead remake that was done in 2013 was an entire reimagination, which I'm not knocking. The film was fine. But it wasn't Evil Dead in the sense that Evil Dead fans might be looking for. If you've seen all of those movies, you know what I mean. Punk also had a role in another horror film that was released later in 2019 called Rabid. His wife AJ Mendez was also part of the cast on that movie. Finally, on November 12, 2019, Punk made a surprise appearance on the Fox Sports 1 series WWE Backstage, which was a weekly studio show that began in November 2019 and was hosted by Renee Young and Booker T. He subsequently joined the program as a special commentator and analyst, making regular appearances. He had accepted this job because he would be under contract with Fox instead of WWE directly. Punk announced his arrival, saying, "It's as simple as this. Just when they think they've got the answers, I change the culture. I'll see you here next week." On March 13, 2020, filming on the show was halted due to the COVID-19 pandemic. On June 22, 2020, FS1 announced that the show would no longer be airing weekly and production was indefinitely suspended. In closing, I want to thank you all again for joining me today as we ventured through the development of CM Punk, who was so much more than just a minor threat. Join us next time for more tales of the wrestling world and how pop culture and the world around us shape storylines. In the meantime, you can access updates and additional content about all episodes on Twitter at WPR Media, as well as Facebook and Instagram at Wrestling Public Radio. This is Crystal Schmidt signing off for Wrestling Public Radio. Thank you.